It's a Thursday edition of Locked On Heat. On today's show, the Heat beat the Hawks for the second time in two nights. We'll tell you how they did it.
No Dwayne, no Goran, no James, no problem. Several players stepped up for the Heat, and we'll break it all down for you. Thank you for listening and for subscribing. Now let's get to the show.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm a credentialed writer covering the NBA for The Step Back, and I write for the Miami Heat's Tip Off magazine. You can find me on Twitter at WC Goldberg.
And I'm David Ramillo, credentialed NBA writer who's covered the Heat for SB Nation and allyoucaneat.com. I cover the league at large for Fansided, and you can follow me and my writing on Twitter at DRamillo13.
It's a good day to be Kelly Olynyk, who not only made 5 of his 7 three-point attempts, but also eclipsed 1,700 minutes played this season, which means he'll accrue his $1 million salary bonus. Maybe now he can afford a haircut, David.
I think he was good before. I think he's going to buy a lot more Chipotle is what he's going to do with that $1 million.
We're here recapping the Heat's 115-86 win over the Hawks to sweep the home-and-home series. And they did it, David, not with Dwayne Wade, Goran Dragic, or James Johnson, but with the three ball. Miami averages about 31 three-point attempts per game. They put up 38 tonight. That's a Rockets rate amount of threes almost. And they were falling.
Yeah, I mean, that was the difference between tonight and a rather listless showing against the Hawks on Tuesday. They knocked down 17 of 38 for 44.7%, almost 45% of their threes. So that's pretty good. I mean, certainly above league average. And look, the Hawks were down. Their lineup was a little different than what it was on Tuesday night. But the Heat were able to capitalize even without some of these star players, too. So, look, Hassan Whiteside, another second good game for him, although he wasn't as prolific or productive as he was the night before, but another solid night. And everybody else stepped up in the absence of Goran Dragic and James Johnson. So that was impressive.
To sort of go along with the whole theme about three-point making tonight, Wayne Ellington set an NBA record for three-pointers made off the bench in a season with 207. He breaks Eric Gordon's record that he set last season. Three-point records are going down all the time, but pretty cool for Wayne Ellington to have that record, especially in a contract year. That's going to help him make a little bit of money this summer, right?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I still wonder about Ellington's overall value as how he's viewed around the league by 29 other teams. Like, obviously, he's going to be making a lot of money, probably much more than Miami could afford, right? But at the same time, I wonder if other teams view him as just being productive because of the system being based on his unique skill set and being able to maximize what it is that he does. But I'm curious to see what happens this summer with Wayne.
He made 3 of his 8 three-pointers. Olynyk made 5 of 7. Magruder made 3 of 4. Richardson made both of the three-point attempts that he attempted. What was interesting about what Atlanta tried to do defensively is at one point they went to a zone defense, and the way to beat a zone defense is to make shots, right? Zones typically make it a little bit more difficult for teams to penetrate and drive to the rim. And the Heat basically got hot from three-point range when they had to in order to sort of counteract that Atlanta zone that they went to, that 2-3 zone. Yeah. They just started making a bunch of threes, and they never really stopped making them. I think at one point, you know, they started to slow down just in their attempts towards the end in garbage time. Spoelstra basically yanked the starters / reserves who were playing for the injured starters 7.5 minutes into the fourth quarter. It was garbage time after that, right? This team probably would have put up, I don't know, 42, 43 three-pointers had they maintained that pace that they were going at throughout the first three quarters.
That's about right. And the zone, it's interesting too. I think I saw a friend of the program, Nikias, kind of say something about the zone, that it was good for Miami to see this in case any team breaks that out in the playoffs. I feel like Brooklyn was a team that kind of showed zone against us as well. Couple nights. Okay, that's why I wasn't sure. And I don't know if Atlanta did it in the previous victory. But either way,
I don't remember it from that first Atlanta game.
Yeah, neither do I. But
Eric Reed mentioned that they had been working on it for 2 or 3 weeks now, which is a really good tanking maneuver if you're Atlanta, just to like for like the last couple weeks of the season, just be like, you know what? Let's roll out a new defense that we've never done before just to see how many more games we could lose. There was some wondering that with the Heat pulling James Johnson, Dwayne Wade, and Goran Dragic for injuries that we hadn't really necessarily been aware of, that maybe that the Heat were doing their own kind of version of tanking, They're in the sixth slot right now, currently paired up with the Cavaliers in the first round. Obviously, that's not the best matchup that you'd want. Everybody's sort of eyeing that seventh seed that's currently slated to play Boston in the first round. Some people were wondering, hey, are you tanking in order to move down a peg in the Eastern Conference? I don't think that that was the case, but what do you think?
No, I don't think so either. Just another night of rest on the second night of back-to-back, just because I think that the having to play the back-to-back like that is going to put much more strain on guys that play considerable amount of minutes, and both Gora and James have done that. So I think it's just a rather cautious maneuver, not necessarily one to adjust for seeding. That just doesn't seem the way that this team is wired. I don't think they care one way or the other whether they face Boston, Philadelphia, or Cleveland. And Philadelphia, actually, they won in Detroit. So they're tied, I believe, with Cleveland as far as their overall record, but still below the Cavaliers in the standings. So that's something to keep an eye out there. It seems like Miami's going to match up with either the Cavs or Philadelphia, depending on how the rest of the season shapes up.
That's right. And yeah, those other the 76ers in Milwaukee idle tonight, or the Wizards, I should say, not playing tonight. So right now, Miami picks up a half-game lead on those two teams to maintain that sixth seed. Still plenty of basketball to be played when you're that close within the standings. I don't think it was a tanking maneuver by them. And it was, it's good to get rest for those veteran guys too.
Yeah.
And still get a pretty easy win here.
No, very easy.
Kind of a very easy win here. So you're able to recharge their batteries a little bit, get a couple nights off. They play again Friday night. So they're going to have a few days off here to, you know, recharge the batteries and for these last, you know, couple games of the season, that could end up being pretty important. We're going to go answer some of your questions that you tweeted using the hashtag AskLOHeat after this quick break. Hey, everyone. I hope you're subscribed to Locked On NBA. Yes, yes, yes. This is Locked On Heat. And we appreciate you subscribing and listening to this as always. But you're going to want to add Locked On NBA to your daily podcast playlist. Why? Because it's the only daily NBA podcast that's less than 30 minutes long and delivers the most important news, scores, and storylines of the day. It's bite-sized, it's consumable, it's ready to go every day for you. And make sure to listen on Tuesdays because that's when David and I are hosting. To get the latest episode every day, subscribe on iTunes or on your favorite podcasting app. Let's go to Twitter and answer some of the questions you sent in using the hashtag AskLOHeat. And the first one comes from Alana Tahauer. A celebrity tweet, she, the editor of AllYouCanHeat.com and friend of the program, of course, wants to ask, how do you feel about James Johnson's current hair/beard situation? Now, do you have an opinion on this?
Not a particularly strong one. I know that it kind of fluctuates in length and it's looking a little bit wild of late. I don't know that the beard situation's changed much. Has it grown longer? I'm probably just not concerned about his hair at this point in time. And I know that that's a failing on my part. And I apologize to our listeners for not paying closer attention to you know, James Johnson's hair. But I haven't noticed much of a difference. The hair is looking wild. I know he kind of let it go free a couple of games ago. The beard, I hadn't really noticed much. If you've got
he had shaved the beard a few weeks back, right?
And he seems like Homer Simpson and that he has permanent levels of stubble there. Am I mistaken in this?
I think he does, but unless he goes with the close shave again like he did a few weeks ago, it was just strange. It was very jarring. And look, I think both the beard and the hair are at an even length right now, though they're both a little wild. I think they're kept like that on purpose. It's not for a lack of maintenance. It's just that's the way he maintains it. He gets that messy look. I'm all in on it. I like the beard and hair combo, especially when, you know, I prefer James Johnson to be playing and not be sidelined. But if he isn't sidelined, a nice tailored suit with the messy hair and beard combo, it works. That's what's in right now. I have no problem with it. He's got that celebrity, that Brad Pitt celebrity look going on right now. When Brad Pitt gets the big beard, James Johnson can pull it off.
You tossed that word celebrity around twice so far to describe Alana and James Johnson on the sideline. I think we need to have a talk about what constitutes a celebrity.
I think we have to have a talk with Alana to get her back on the show here pretty soon because we got to get her style corner back on. I know that you hate that segment and that she wedged her way back into our show without even being invited. But we got to get her back on. Let's move on to our next one. Francisco asks, what do you think of Justice getting more opportunities as a lead guard? And what do you think Josh Richardson needs to work on the most in the offseason? David, I wanted to maybe save this for our mailbag next week. But Justice Winslow tied for a team-high 5 assists in this game. Again, no Goran Dragic, no Dwayne Wade, so he had the ball in his hands even more than he usually does and had that opportunity. And with that opportunity, again, led the team along with Kelly Olynyk with 5 assists. I thought he looked really good as that lead and secondary ball handler. I still prefer him as a secondary ball handler, obviously. But the more practice, the more reps he gets, the better he's going to be for it, right?
Absolutely. I mean, look, he's maximizing his skills of what he does best. I think when he gets in the open court, he can be pretty dangerous. He's not, he's not necessarily the best playmaker, but he's good enough at this point to make plays for others and create his own shot as well. I think he's better than Josh Richardson, to be honest with you. He might be as good as, well, okay, let's say if we're ranking them, where does he fit in the hierarchy? Above James Johnson at this point as a playmaker and creator off the dribble, maybe below Dwayne Wade and Goran Dragic? Does that seem about right?
Yeah, I would have said tied for third with James Johnson, I would give him a slight edge only because James Johnson is prone to turnovers and Winslow only had 2 turnovers tonight when he had 5 assists.
Yeah, so that's a
good ratio.
Yeah, so that's pretty impressive. And look, we've followed that progression pretty closely ever since we got a chance to talk to him in summer league a couple seasons ago when Dwayne Wade left to Chicago, and we know that was what the vision was for him even back then as he was entering the second year before injuries hit in. So I think this has been great for him, to be honest with you. As far as, I mean, I don't know if you had anything else to add about Winslow.
No, I think, perfect world, he is your secondary ball handler, but he's able to do things not only off the ball as far as cutting to the basket and setting really good screens for the ball handlers, but when he's coming off of those screens or when he's popping out to three-point range in like a pick-and-pop situation, he's able to get the ball in his hands from the guard that he was initially setting that screen for, and then not only just put the ball up or put a shot up, but then do something with it too. I mean, we're getting into now third and fourth actions because Justice Winslow is able to just help the offense like that. And you look at Miami's pace, which is pretty low typically, even though that's been getting – they've been rising up the ranks in pace in the NBA throughout the season. But they're still pretty conservative, pretty slow, and I think that's only because they don't – not only because they don't have that isolation guy like a James Harden who can sort of lead your pace that way – but because they get into so many third and fourth and fifth actions on one offensive possession, they really use a lot of the shot clock. And that's because guys like Justice Winslow and then James Johnson, of course, are able to initiate offense in the middle of an offensive set. I really enjoy Winslow's ability to do that. There was a point in the game where Kelly Olynyk, it was when Atlanta was in their zone, but Kelly Olynyk found Justice Winslow cutting to the basket to sort of crack open that zone defense. And that was in the first half. And then in the second half, Justice Winslow did the same thing, but it was inverted. Winslow found Olynyk cutting to the rim. Winslow making the pass from basically the same spot Olynyk was doing it from. So he's able to – he's like a sponge. He just sort of – he's like, oh, whoa, that was a really good way to attack the zone. I'm going to go do that later on. And then he did.
Yeah.
And that was good to see too.
Absolutely.
As far as Josh Richardson goes, what does he need to work on most of the offseason? I mean, this is a guy who is pretty much your prototypical 3-and-D player. But for me – I look at him just getting to his spots more aggressively. He's got a couple of those sweet spots. He likes to get those floaters in the lane. He's working on a turnaround jumper game in the mid range, which could be really effective if he gets better at that. But you look at the big nights he has, and that's when he's getting really aggressive, when he's really finding his spots and getting his shot up. I want him to just do more of that, get more aggressive. Maybe he needs to add some size, some bulk to really force his way into the spots that he wants. But that's what I'm looking at.
I think that's about, right. And to be honest, it kind of ties into what I'm thinking. For me, as good as he seems in the mid range, and it seems like he's pretty solid overall because he has the length to shoot over defenders, I want him to cut those out of his game, to be honest with you. I want him to be more aggressive with his dribble, getting to the rim and creating contact, and that's something that he just doesn't do. He uses his length so skillfully to kind of get around and put up that floater or a scoop shot around the rim. But at the same time, he needs to be able to draw that contact, get to the rim, create easy points away, a la James Harden. Whether you like it stylistically, aesthetically or not, it doesn't matter. It's effective, and it would work really well for a guy like Josh and for this team that doesn't shoot a lot of free throws. So I think to me, I would want him to be able to focus more on a 3-point shot or getting to the rim and cut out those mid-range shots that he takes so frequently.
Right. Kind of the, you know, that 3-and-D game, that high efficiency Rockets game. He's only had 19 dunks this season.
Right.
I'm trying to look at what he did his rookie year, where it seemed like he was dunking a lot more.
I think in our preseason preview, I said that was a number that I was hoping would go up, and unfortunately it did not, you know? Like, we saw
14 dunks as a rookie, and he only played like half the year, basically.
Right. Yeah, that's when he was getting to the rim all the time. And that's what a number in our preseason preview that, you know, we had said should increase based on the aggression that we saw from him during those preseason games when he looked unstoppable. Then kind of things kind of changed after that, where he kind of was a little bit more passive and not getting to the rim nearly as much, settling for those mid-range shots. That's not going to help the Heat. I mean, look, it's great if you're bailing out the team again as the shot clock starts winding down and you've killed the clock and you've got like 3 or 4 seconds left. You need to put up a shot. I understand it. But I'd like for him to be more aggressive and just being able to bull his way to the rim, creating contact or getting an easier shot at the rim.
And then getting more free throw attempts, obviously.
Absolutely, yeah.
Kelly Olynyk again showed why he's Miami's most reliable center. We're going to talk about that after this. It's easier than ever to listen to Locked On Heat. You don't even have to use your hands. Now you can stream the show on your smart speaker, such as Amazon Echo or Google Home. It's easy. Here, I'll show you. Alexa, play the Locked On Heat podcast.
Getting the latest episode of Locked On Heat. Here it is from TuneIn.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Now it's that much easier to stay up to date on the latest episodes of Locked On Heat, the only daily Miami Heat podcast. Subscribe on iTunes or on your favorite podcasting app. Spotlight player time, David. Who you got?
I got Josh Richardson, to be honest with you. I think he was Miami's, well, I don't know if he was his best player, but one of them certainly. In Goran's absence, he took over a lot of the scoring lead, finishing with 19 points, 7 of 12 shooting. Also chipped in 4 rebounds, 2 assists, 3 steals, and 4 blocks. Look, you have to insert the caveat that it was an undermanned Atlanta team that's not playing particularly well. But Richardson was able to take over that game, really show off his versatility, something that makes him such an interesting player. Can I bring up something I saw on Twitter actually a couple of days ago, also by Nick Hyas? I think he had a survey, one of those surveys that said, you know, if we were judging value, what would we judge Josh Richardson's value versus, say, Victor Oladipo prior to this season? Obviously, he's gone and become an all-star, but nobody really expected that when he was traded from Oklahoma City to Indiana. Who would you think is the more valuable player at this point? To me, I think it's Richardson. I mean, whether Oladipo has become more valuable now is debatable. I mean, I think that's pretty clear, you know, becoming an all-star and all. But based on what we had seen in his previous seasons with Orlando and Oklahoma City, no one expected Oladipo to take this turn. I would have thought that Richardson is a more valuable player at this point in his career.
Before the, you mean going into the season, who was more valuable in like maybe a trade? I think it would definitely have been
Richardson. Current Richardson versus previous
before this season. Oladipo. Yeah, I would say this Richardson too, because you also have to factor in the contract, because Oladipo is making $25 million.
Yeah,
and Josh Richardson's going to go into his first year of a rookie scale extension next season, making about a little bit more than $10 million, I think, next year. So. Yeah, that makes sense. And then, you know, Fox Sports Florida during that broadcast, they kept putting out this graphic of a picture of Josh Richardson and LeBron James there.
Yes.
What got two guys this season who have recorded 100 plus steals, 70 plus blocks, and 100 plus threes. Now, that's sort of one of those basketball reference season finder stats.
Right.
But interesting, I guess. I mean, is it? Does that matter?
I mean, you can probably find those statistics for anybody, like you said. I mean, you enter the right criteria and all of a sudden it'll make you seem like Roddy Magruder is like an all-time great or something like that. Only him and Oscar Robertson were able to average 5 minutes and 3 rebounds or something like that, you know. it's nice because, again, I think it just further proves how versatile Richardson has become and what a good overall player he is. And that's fine. I mean, I think he's worked to get to this point. I think the all defense kind of buzz that we were getting about him a few weeks ago, maybe a couple months ago, has died down a little bit. That doesn't seem as likely now for some reason, but I think he's still having an impact. I'd love for him to be able to capitalize on the success that we've seen from him lately and have a really strong postseason, because I think the national audience just doesn't, I mean, for the most part, I don't think they're aware of how good Richardson has become.
Right. And I think he could still maybe make that all defensive team. We actually have a question about that in our email inbox, David, that we're going to answer on the mailbag next week. So I'm looking forward to that conversation. But my spotlight player is Kelly Olynyk. I know we talked about him a little bit. Just to kind of reinforce how good Kelly Olynyk has been for the Heat this season. This was a great game for that. 19 points, 8 rebounds, 5 assists in 23 minutes. He made his first 5 three-pointers that he attempted. And not only was he just shooting really well from three-point range, and we know that Kelly Olynyk is due for one of those games every once in a while where he just can't miss from three-point range. But his feel for the game is so evident, and especially in the way that he attacked Atlanta's zone. I talked about that earlier, but just understanding what the game needs from him and not really forcing the issue. I mean, he gets so much of what he does comes in the flow of the offense. You never see him, and I know we compare him a lot to Whiteside, but Whiteside tends to force his own shot. There's a couple of times where he'll force a post-up or grab a rebound and through force of will, just say, you know what, I'm not giving this ball to you, Tyler Johnson. I'm taking this down the court myself, because if I don't prove that I could play small ball, I'm not going to play at the end of games. Olynyk, everything he does is in the flow of the game, and I appreciate that about him. Against that Atlanta zone, again, to go back to that, when the Hawks first rolled it out, on the first two series, Olynyk tried to penetrate the zone, right? And we know that that's what the zone is designed to prevent. They tried to penetrate the zone, and he ended up losing the ball off his foot or something, kind of dribbled it out of bounds. On the next Heat possession, Bam Adebayo sort of did the same thing, but he went up for a layup, and then it was a little contested, and it kind of just flew off his hands and over the rim. Immediately after that, on the next possession, Kelly Olynyk decided, you know what, I'm going to take the ball from the triple threat position, and instead of me putting the ball on the floor, even though everybody knows I used to play guard and I could do that, I'm going to penetrate the zone with my passing game. And that's what he did. He started getting the ball to Justice Winslow cutting the rim and Rodney Magruder cutting the rim, and all these guys started doing that. And that was such an immediate switch and such an obvious just a really good way to portray Olynyk's feel for the game and his overall basketball IQ. I really just wanted to talk about that and how valuable that is to Miami's offense. Because without that, if Olynyk doesn't make that switch, I think the game ends up getting a lot closer. That was kind of the moment where Miami was like, you know what, you're going to the zone anyway. We don't care. We're still going to extend our lead. And that's really what gave them the momentum to blow that game open. And again, go to garbage time with 7.5 minutes left in the game.
That's fair. I mean, it's hard to play the what would have happened scenario kind of thing. But at the same time, there's no denying that his versatility certainly makes things easier. And again, it's probably aided by the fact that Atlanta's not a particularly good team. But, you know, this was a team that was a little bit deeper the night before and gave Miami starters a problem. So I think it's fair to say that Kelly Olynyk makes a really, really positive impact. That passing, if you had told me at the start of the season that we would have fallen in love with Kelly Olynyk's game the way we have, I probably would have been pretty surprised. I know he was capable of these things, but to see some of the slick passing, the fake dribble handoffs, the work, the way he works around the basket, damn, it's been impressive. I really had no idea.
Well, that wasn't even for a lack of not watching him, you know. And I'm not saying he did, but like he didn't get to do that in Boston, right? Isaiah Thomas dominated the ball last season.
I mean, he had moments, but they were so infrequent. And I know that was the biggest concern there, was that a lot of Celtics fans, as much as they liked what he did, I think it was much more inconsistent. And even though he still battles with inconsistency sometimes in Miami, I think he's been a lot better overall. He's playing a lot more. And you know, he's 26. Not necessarily young by today's standards, but still young enough where there's room for improvement there. And he's become a solid part of the Miami's rotation.
A great free agency addition for the Heat. A nice game for him. Again, he's $1 million richer after tonight. But that's all we have for today. Just a heads up, we might not be able to get another show up this week due to some scheduling conflicts, but we'll be back next week for sure with the last mailbag of the regular season. You could send mailbag questions and ask about advertising on the show by sending an email to lockedonheat@gmail.com. Tweet your questions and comments for our recaps using the hashtag AskLOHeat, and support the show by visiting our Patreon page at patreon.com/lockedonheat. Music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
Chipotle for everybody.